Welcome to Plot Pit, the show where we'll take almost anything and uncover a story within for you to use in your own tale-telling mediums of choice. From novels, novelettes, short stories, poems, songs, scripts for screen and stage, honestly, it doesn't matter, we'll spec something, and you might use it. I'm your host, William Atkinson, here in the pit with author John LeMay. Hello, John, how you doing?
Good afternoon, William.
All right, welcome back. Episode 5, you've become a permanent fixture in that chair.
Seems to be.
All right, today, in the pit, what are we going to do with a old Ford that sinks through the ice and a lake pike eating its parts, in combination with a farmer who was blessed with a set of triplets from his prized cow. Today, in the pit. Okay, so we're hitting on this fairy theme the last couple of episodes, and I've got from the Omaha Sunday Bee, January 7, 1923, we used this one in the last episode. The headline here is Ford sinks through ice, parts found in stomach of lake pike, Wisconsin. Today, when Lewis Holcomb, a city fireman, was cleaning a big pike that he had caught through the ice, he discovered a bolt 2 inches long in the fish's innards. He also found a radiator cap, which Schroeder identified as having belonged to his drowned Ford. So we've got this ice fishing situation, escapade. It's kind of interesting that a fish would eat a 2-inch bolt and a radiator cap.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good size hunk of metal when you think about it. All right. Alexandria Gazette, Monday, January 8, 1923. Headline, triplet calves are born at Centerville. Centerville, Maryland, January 8. The stork paid visit to the farm of E.H. Jester near Centerville and presented triplets to one of the prized bovines of the Jester dairy herd. All three of the calves were perfectly formed and appeared healthy, but two died. One member of the trio still survives and gives every indication of being a hardy and permanent member of the dairy household. The same cow gave birth to twins last January. So, we've got a rather prolific bovine on this family farm. And we've hit a little bit on the concept that fairies can be good, they can be bad. And then, of course, if you're feeding the fairies, your household fairies will do chores for you. And here we have a stork delivering three calves to a farmer. So what would we do with this?
Well, you had kind of more of a good angle on it as opposed to like a mischievous or a bad one. Why don't you go with your good one and then I'll counter with the bad one.
All right. So what we've got is this farmer who is feeding the fairy, leaving out cake, milk, cheese, other things, right? He's coexisting with these house fairies. And we are talking about the 1920s here, during a time period where the automobile is just getting started. So we could tie these two stories from Maryland and Wisconsin together. You've got this family farm, and they had a really nice gestured uncle or something, okay, inherited some money or was gifted to them some way or another. You've got this Ford that is given to this farm, whereas before they were, you know, horse and buggy kind of thing. And so this farmer, for whatever reason, has a lot of emotional attachment to this Ford. Now, he's out trucking away in the field one day and drives across the pond, not realizing that's what happened. It collapses into the water. Later, a pike is caught, and it turns out that the pike is a genie, and this farmer wants his Ford back. So that's my thought there. And then to fit the bovine into that is because he's been so kind to fairies, he's just being blessed in all sorts of scenarios. And then there's this one disgruntled fairy, for whatever reason, that caused the whole Ford to fall into the ice. So that's where my head was.
So my head, I guess because you're talking about ice fishing kind of and rural settings, I immediately am thinking Grumpy Old Men meets Darby O'Gill and the Little People, which most people know Grumpy Old Men with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon.
Oh, funny movie.
Yeah, but most people, you know, Darby O'Gill and the Little People was an old Disney movie from the early 1960s. It has Sean Connery in his first, not starring role, but in a supporting role. But it's just a comedy about an old man in the countryside who has to interact with these leprechauns. I can't remember at this point what really happened in it. But what I'm thinking is just basically grumpier old men with fairies. And so the fairies are out to torment these two old men. That's why his car sunk in the ice. And then the fish swallowing the parts and him catching the fish is just the fairies taunting him, you know, reminding him of what's happened. And then the other farmer with the cows, you know, maybe to him it's not a blessing. I think this farmer wants to be left alone, and he gets so much notoriety for this cow that keeps giving birth to twins and triplets, and he just hates it. And so I see the fairies trying to torture these two old men in mischievous ways. And maybe they pit the old men against each other at first, but then the old men figure out what's going on, and then they team up against the fairies or the mischievous little people, whatever they are.
Okay, I like it. I like it. And we have, say, an underpinning, because we're talking about these fairies or you know, kind of in the icier areas of the country. We could hit on their genealogy going back to, say, Iceland and some of the Northern European cultures. And so they're like immigrants, and they brought these fairies over, say, three or four generations before. And the great, great, great grandfather's the one who pissed the fairies off.
Yeah.
And now they are tormenting the family line.
Yeah. And I guess these two farmers could be like distantly related, you know, like second cousins or something, but they still have the same great, 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 great grandfather or something.
There's some ancestral connection there. Yeah. Okay. So if we were to have that, then we've got this, say, dark comedy thing going on. Mm-hmm. If we were to add a layer of a twist, you've got this pike. If we were to take part of my blessing or good idea type scenario, and it's like a genie or a fairy from the Native American mythology, because this farmer catches this pike, perhaps he doesn't actually kill him. He does catch and release. And this pike turns out to be this genie or this fairy or whatever, and grants like this wish, and you know, for sparing his life. That wish, I would think, for the farmer that caught him, maybe both farmers, would be help us get rid of these evil spirits that have been tormenting the family line. So how would that interaction transpire?
Well, you intrigued me because we were talking about the fairies coming over from Ireland with these what used to be immigrants many years ago, and now they're descendants. So now I'm thinking, okay, the Native American spirits tied in with that fish that he caught don't like the fairies, which are to them foreigners. So maybe you've now got the Native American helpers, or little people, fighting against the fairies from Ireland.
Okay, that could be fun. So we've got a good fairy or good fairies from the Native American tribes that don't like these evil fairies or these malevolent fairies coming in from the old world of Europe. Okay. And I've briefly looked up here ways to get rid of fairies or to protect yourself from fairies. One of which is by appeasing the fairy and giving it fresh milk or butter or cream. And so what you could have is the farmer who catches this pike, which turns out to be a good fairy, blesses the other farmer or one of them with this cow that's constantly producing bovines that are able to be the blessed udder, if you will. I like that.
Blessed udder.
So they're giving as much milk as you could possibly think of to feed these voracious appetites of the evil fairies. Now, another way you can potentially protect yourself or get rid of a fairy is by asking for the protection of your deities or your ancestors, so your ancestral genealogy. But this could actually backfire. The good fairy doesn't know why these bad fairies don't like these two old men. And this good fairy knows, hey, let's just get your ancestors over here and they'll take care of the evil spirits for you. But the ancestors of these two guys are the ones that pissed off the fairies originally.
Yeah.
So you could have trickster fairies get really upset by seeing these old acquaintances.
Yeah, and then these two old men have to figure out what their ancestors did a zillion years ago to make the fairies mad, and it's like it creates a mystery for them to solve.
Ooh, that would be fun. Yeah. All right, so what would that mystery be? Now, if we're going with the idea that these were originally good fairies that got pissed off because somebody misplaced a broom in the home.
Yeah. I think it's got to be something more interesting than that, though. I think there's got to be like a reason that provides a twist or a shock for the audience at the end. And but I mean, I think what makes the rubber meet the road is just that, the like I said, it's grumpy old men. The two old men don't like each other, but they've got to work together to solve this little problem with the fairy people.
And they share a common ancestor,
mm-hmm, yeah,
that pissed off these evil spirits originally that are now haunting the family.
Ooh, and it's like Hatfield and McCoy, except for they're related, and they're from a split line in the family that hated each other, and it's been a generational feud. So that plays in with the offense that they have to finally bury the hatchet with this generations-long family feud.
Okay. Ooh. What if the hatchet, burying the hatchet, was an actual physical thing?
Yeah, could be.
So it's an actual hatchet.
Could be.
You know, obviously, metaphorically speaking, in the story, well, yeah, it represents something, but it would be, in the story, a physical hatchet.
Yeah, and that's where the term came from, and they learned that's where that term originated from, is from their ancestors or something.
Okay. Ooh, now, I like that, because what you've hit on there is a means to describe the etymology of a phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Or the etymology of a word, bringing it into a story in a creative way. And so that crosses kind of the idea of education with fictional storytelling.
Okay. And well, I was just looking so about where that term originates, burying the hatchet. And so this takes us down another... we might have to do away with the idea of the Irish fairies and all that. We might actually have to retrofit this to where... Actually, these two men are descendants of the Native American tribes, because I'm reading about burying the hatchet that says the expression comes from a centuries-old practice involving the literal burying of a hatchet seen among the Native American tribes of North America. Chiefs would meet and bury their weapons as a symbolic gesture of peace.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, although they wouldn't have to be. I mean, it could be. You could make it comical where you find what's the Irish equivalent of a hatchet and they have to bury... I don't know, like a whiskey bottle or like
soured potato.
Yeah, or a hoe that you use for gardening, you know, or some sort of utensil, and they have to bury that.
All right, no offense to anybody from Ireland listening to this. I hope you give a good crack.
Oh, I have red hair. Get over it. Whatever.
I got family from that area. So I like the idea of retrofitting it, though, and bringing it here and telling a story focused in and around the Native Americans. What two tribes... Native American nations would we be able to incorporate coming out of, say, Wisconsin and Michigan?
See, I'm bad because I only know my New Mexico stuff, and in New Mexico it would be the Apache and the Navajo didn't like each other. So in Wisconsin, I think just our listeners will have to just Google and figure out what two tribes in Wisconsin really didn't like each other, and that would be the two.
Okay, well, let's hit it in New Mexico then. The Navajo and the Apache. Mm-hmm. What little people lore are around here that would fit this?
So again, we've got the Duendes from the Hispanic peoples. That was more of a Spanish culture thing. But, you know, those were just like the fairies we talked about in a previous episode, where they kind of just mess up things in your house like a gremlin. And if you leave the house and move to a new house, they'll follow you. And there's still people here in New Mexico today that believe in the Duendes causing problems. Now, the Native Americans didn't really have Duendes. They just had, again, the magical little people that they kind of revered and left alone. So, yeah, I mean, if we were to retrofit this for New Mexico, you know, I think the Duendes are more interesting and more fairy-like than the Apache little people they used to see. So I'd probably just go with, yeah, some sort of Duendes are bothering these farmers. They have to settle their generational feud and bury whatever the item is in the dirt. And I would guess that the story's end, one of them would be trying to bury the you know, whatever the symbolic hatchet is, and one of the little people would be trying to prevent it from happening or something.
Okay. I know that when I was doing some background research for the Pioneer Days here in Roswell, the James Miller autobiography talks about Billy the Kid camping out at Bottomless Lakes and meeting James Miller and talking about how there's fish in them lakes,
mm-hmm,
and that they're black.
Yeah.
So the pike story that we had from Wisconsin, we could translate that over here as a black fish in the Bottomless Lakes. And of course, there's plenty of mythological large fish.
Mm-hmm.
In all sorts of cultures that we could tap into.
And furthermore, there are actually a lot of stories about cars driving into bottomless lakes. So we've got plenty of those here.
Okay, so we've got this car that goes off the bluffs, lands in bottomless lakes. Yeah. This blackfish ends up eating these auto parts, and you've got these two descendants from Native American tribes, a Navajo and an Apache, that have, we could do kind of a young adult situation where they're like high school rivals.
Yeah, that too.
All right, so if you were to focus here in Roswell, we could have Roswell High versus Goddard High.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and go down that route.
Yeah. Don't have any Navajo population here. There's a very small Apache population just because we live in close proximity to Mescalero or Apache Reservation. So it might have to be strictly Apache and just Apache relatives that didn't like each other perhaps. And they would probably be intermarried with the Spanish, so they'd be part Apache and part Hispanic, because I know a decent amount of people that have that mixed bloodline. So I think that would probably work, mixed Apache, mixed Hispanic. And then you have the Duendes on the Hispanic side, where they're looked at as nothing but a menace. And then the Apache kind of look at them as maybe they can be helpful sometimes. So that could come into play too, this mixed bloodline. Which belief system do they lay into, their Hispanic side or their Apache side? And maybe that plays into how they confront the little people or appease them.
Okay. Now, if we were to layer a bit of a twist on this, maybe these two particular fairies that are, or these groups of fairies, these little people, whatever we want to label them as, they're not deliberately attacking these two individuals or these two families because they dislike them. The twist could be that they're actually trying to bring these two families together because they have a more important destiny.
Yeah, that's cool. That's the surprise you reveal and the epilogue. And yeah, that would be kind of a happy, upbeat way to end it.
And not only do these two families come together, but they come together to fulfill their family destiny. And that could be the finding of the lost city of gold, or they are able to reunite the Native American populations together into a cohesive, functional political unit and restore humanity's attachment and reverence with nature.
And there's a lot of Native American kind of prophecies that they will eventually retake the land.
So you can tie there?
Yeah, you could go that route as well.
So there's a lot of different things that we could do with this. I like the idea of keeping it upbeat and playing into the human condition and exploring that in a fun way.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like the idea of, you know, what these fairies are traditionally viewed as, kind of, you know, stay away from them. They're not necessarily bad, not necessarily good, but we just don't want to piss them off kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. And then they're, you know, these pixies, sprites, fairies, or whatever, are legitimately trying to help humanity outgrow certain bad behaviors that we have.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, in the meantime, we have been your host on this journey. I hope that you have enjoyed it. I know that John and I enjoy these episodes.
Absolutely.
We are hitting time now, but John, you have over 40 books to your name, and we can get them where?
Just Amazon.com. Just type in John LeMay or go to bicepbooks.com, and plenty of links with all the different titles.
There's The Noted Desperado, which is a fun young adult romp. I've enjoyed that.
Oh, thank you.
And then Once Upon a Time in Fort Sumner, both of which are based on the Billy the Kid mythology.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That mythos. And then you have several other historical type books and books in the informational section of movies and then cryptids.
Yeah, and that's how I knew so much about the Duendes, is I'm doing a book on the history of witches and witchcraft in colonial New Mexico and territorial New Mexico. And the Duendes aren't really part of that, but I mean, they are part of that mystical element of the folklore and all that. So that one should be interesting when it's done.
Oh, that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. We might have to bring that material in for a couple of Plot Pit episodes.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you could make a Hocus Pocus out of that pretty easy, because they have like these three witches that died in Taos, you know, which I just thought was funny that it was three. And there's like a thing where they're worried that the witches are going to come out of their graves, you know? So, I mean, it's really similar to the Sanderson sisters and all that. So, yeah, we could definitely do something with that in the future.
Oh, that sounds like a blast. All right, well, folks, until next time, if you have any inspiration that this show has brought to you and would like to submit it or be on the show, email submissions@plotpit.com. Until next time.